Hello, and welcome to the Queen's Observatory Fast Radio Bursts. I am Connor Stone, here with my co-host, Nikhil Arora. It is our mission to bring exciting space news hot off the telescope and into your ears. One way or another, the Queen's Observatory has continued its practice of sharing the wonders of the universe since 1857. Thank you for joining us in this long-running tradition. Here at Fast Radio Bursts, we will answer your questions, interview astronomers, and dive deep into breaking research. From low Earth orbit to the clouds of Venus, from Betelgeuse to colliding black holes, it's a big universe to talk about, so let's get started.
And welcome back to Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Bursts. I am your host, Nick Arora, here with my co-host, once again, Connor Stone. Connor, how are you doing today? Are you excited about what's going to happen?
Yes. Finally, like the Great Filters episode, I had a lot of fun putting together. It's a lot of armchair astronomy, which is very fun to do.
All right, perfect. So I think Connor gave it away a little bit, but that's what we're doing today. We're going through our series, The Living Universe, where we're discussing sort of the science behind and the motivations behind looking for life in other parts of the universe, in other parts of our galaxy. So in our previous episode, we presented a paradox, something called the Fermi paradox, where we sort of gave you the reasons and the factors that are needed to make life and intelligent life in the universe. And we found that those factors are very common in the universe. Then the question becomes, why haven't we seen in the intelligent life or life in other parts of the universe?
And today, that reminds me of, like, the story behind the Fermi paradox is that they were just having lunch, and out of nowhere, Fermi just stood up and was like, "Where is everybody?"
Right.
And it's because he had basically had this realization that we talked about in the last episode.
Exactly. Yeah. So today we try to answer that exact question posed by Fermi, Enrico Fermi. Where is everybody? How do we solve this paradox that Fermi put together? And also, that seems fairly obvious. Connor, let's start with the easy one. What are some of the easiest solutions to the Fermi paradox? If life can be so common in the universe, why don't we see it?
Right. So the simplest solutions to the Fermi paradox are really going back to the Drake equation and saying, what if we got one of these numbers wrong? So the idea could be like the rare Earth hypothesis.
Right.
So in some way or another, it's very rare to get an Earth-like planet. So we're not sure of all the things that make Earth a good planet for life. We know that it's got a rocky surface. It's got a nice amount of gravity. It can hold a good atmosphere. It's got lots of liquid water. But maybe one of the things that makes Earth more habitable is the moon. And our moon, we know, is kind of weird. So it's possible that, like, the rare Earth hypothesis is something about Earth is extremely rare. Right. And that's what makes us special.
Yeah. This is still an active area of research, right? Trying to answer the question whether Earth is a planet which comes dime a dozen kind of thing in the universe, or is something that is found just where we are. And there are multiple reasons. One of the things that you pointed out is our moon. I want to point out to our listeners that this is an active area of research. We actually don't completely understand the commonness or maybe the uniqueness of our planet yet completely.
Yeah, there's so much more to learn, and it's very exciting. Another along the same vein is rare chemistry. So that hypothesis is that Earth got really lucky with just the right mix of chemicals. Now, kind of like the rare Earth hypothesis, we wouldn't know exactly what it is that is the chemical that makes Earth special, but we just happened to have a lot of just the right one. The thing is, the more we've learned about the universe, like with the Kepler program, the more we've learned that a lot of the things that we think are special about Earth are actually fairly common. Not universal, but common. So these two hypotheses, they've been around for a long time, but the more we learn, the less likely they seem to become.
Right. Yeah.
So perhaps one of when starting to get into more realistic solutions to the Fermi paradox or great filters could be rare intelligence. Maybe life is everywhere, but the factors which create intelligent life are so precise that it's extremely rare for an intelligent civilization to rise out of a living planet. For example, on Earth, if an asteroid had never killed the non-avian dinosaurs, mammals might never have grown to such prominence, and we would never have had the whole chain of reaction that led to primates walking on land and making fire, right? So there's a bunch of things we know that were lucky breaks throughout the course of Earth's history, which led to just the right situation for some apes to become intelligent.
Yeah, exactly. But I think this also connects back to the rare Earth scenario as well, because asteroids do not hit all planets in the solar system equally. If we were to be in the same position as Neptune is today, we won't get as many asteroids. We also won't get as much sunlight, but that's a different topic.
That's a different problem, yeah.
Exactly. We won't be hit by as many asteroids as we do by being right next to Mars and Jupiter, at the same time living closer to the asteroid belt.
For sure.
Yeah.
Maybe we got lucky. Maybe we have just the right number of asteroid impacts to like reset the clock every now and then, but not too often. Maybe other planets with life get bombarded too much and life can never really grow beyond bacteria because anytime it does, it gets wiped out.
Yeah, just back to square one kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
I'm going to make a very shameless plug here. I don't know, Connor, whether you've seen this movie. It's on Netflix. It's called Don't Look Up.
Oh.
That's what it reminds me. That's the movie that comes into my mind right now.
Yeah.
When we were talking about this.
So it's possible. So that's the idea of the rare intelligence.
Yeah.
Is it's possible that something, and there's many things which it could be, make it very hard for an intelligent civilization to come about. And then last of our simple solutions is rare technology. So maybe life is common, intelligence is fairly common, but technology is exceedingly rare. You could imagine, what if the first intelligent creatures on Earth hadn't been, or the first like self-aware, highly intelligent creatures on Earth hadn't been primates, like humans? What if it had been some octopus-like creature? Octopi are extremely intelligent, but they're underwater. They could be as smart as they want, but it's really hard to develop the kinds of technologies that really propel society forward underwater. You're not going to get fire. And fire is really important for cooking food and giving yourself lots of energy that a brain, a really big brain is hungry. It needs a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So you need to be able to cook food. And if you're underwater, that's just never going to happen.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's so many other technologies that would be really hard to develop underwater. One thing that early humans did, which gave them a huge leg up for hunting, is throwing rocks. And you can't really throw a rock underwater. Not very far, at least. And it won't be moving very fast anyway.
Yeah.
So electronics as well, they don't work underwater. So even if you manage to get up to some like maybe copper age civilization underwater, you wouldn't come up with electronics. You wouldn't come up with any sort of smelting processes. So it's quite possible that there's lots of intelligent life out there in the universe, but they're stunted by some situation of their planet or of how they developed their intelligence that they never developed technology beyond a certain point.
What you're saying is, Connor, that Atlantis and Aquaman cannot happen in real life.
I hate to break it to you. but yeah, it's very hard to develop technology underwater.
Yeah.
And maybe it's very hard. Maybe there's something else that makes some other civilization stop at some point. Like our civilization really benefited, accelerated from having easy access to coal.
Yeah.
That didn't... Now that's not working out so great. But at the time, that was tons of easily accessible energy.
Yeah.
And it's just a coincidence of how life evolved on Earth that there's these huge pockets of coal. So that's not something that's guaranteed to occur. So then there's lots of ways in which a potentially very intelligent civilization could get totally stopped.
Okay, so these are some of, let's say, quote unquote, the easy, simple solutions to the Fermi paradox. Let's start with some of the harder, maybe more complex ways that relate to the great filter. Maybe for now, let's just briefly talk about them, and then when we come back from the break, we'll dive in deeper to them. So Connor, what are some of the bigger, more complex great filters?
Right, so a great filter is just any way in which you could explain the Fermi paradox. Yeah. So we're gonna get into a lot of, like, maybe there's something about intelligent societies that makes them hard to find, or maybe there are lots of intelligent societies out there, but in some way we can't find them. So there's lots of creative things that can occur, because all we're trying to explain is why do we not see lots of civilizations out there. And in fact, before we go any further, I should explain one reason why we're really looking for intelligent civilizations a lot. We're talking a lot about intelligent civilizations and not just life in general. Life in general, we may be able to detect fairly soon. There are telescopes coming online which could detect oxygen in the atmosphere of exoplanets, which would be super exciting because oxygen breaks down really quickly unless it's being replenished, potentially by something alive. And there's other chemicals that we can look for in the atmospheres, but oxygen is one I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
So life in the universe, we may have an answer on soon, but intelligent life has something different. If an intelligent civilization ever arose in our galaxy at any point in the galaxy's lifetime, an intelligent civilization, if they could get only slightly more advanced than us and be able to create spaceships which could travel between stars at a meager 10% the speed of light, which is like 20 times faster than the fastest thing we've ever created.
Right.
And like 200 times faster than Voyager or something like that. It's pretty fast. 10% of the speed of light is nothing to shake your stick at.
No.
But it still would mean it would take many, many years just to get to the closest star. On the scale of our galaxy, this is a snail's pace.
Yeah.
But even if a civilization could just accomplish that, maybe a few decades to 100 or so years more advanced than us, it would only take them on the order of hundreds of thousands of years to colonize every habitable planet in our galaxy.
Right.
This is an exponential growth thing. So one civilization could send out one, maybe it could only send out one spaceship at a time. So they start sending out their spaceships one at a time. But once it gets to another star, that civilization builds up and starts sending out their spaceships one ship at a time. And so now you've got twice as much, and then four times as much, and eight times as much. So you very quickly cover the entire galaxy. It only takes a few hundred thousand years, which is less than a blink of an eye on the timescale of the universe, of our galaxy. So if there ever was an intelligent civilization, it should have covered the galaxy. They don't need much more advanced technology than we have, and it wouldn't take them very long. Maybe even if we say that they are really slow and take their time, every time they get to a new star, it takes them like 10,000 years or something crazy to build up. It still only takes like a few million years, even tens of millions of years to cover the entire galaxy, which is still a blink of an eye. So what's really weird is that there should already be ET here if there's intelligent life out there. But clearly there isn't. I mean, there's a few people who might say there is, but for the most part,
the general consensus.
The general consensus is ET is not here. And so why is that? Yeah. That's the only question we really want to answer with these great filters.
Okay.
And so how that occurs, there's a bunch of different creative ways.
Okay, great. So I think this is a good time to take a break. And when we come back, we will try to go through some of those creative ways and see why we haven't seen intelligent life. We'll be right back.
Hello there.
I'm just stopping by to quickly let you know that the Queen's Observatory is always here to answer your space questions. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and our website. Links to all of these are in the podcast description. We're always happy to talk about the universe, and if you ask a really big question, we just might have to do a podcast about it. I would also like to mention some of the other great resources out there. In the podcast description, you will find links to the McDonald Institute, the Royal Astronomical Society, and the Astronomy on Tap program. They are all excellent programs to bring the universe down to Earth. And with that, let's get back to it.
And welcome back. We're talking about some of the ways we can work around or understand the Fermi paradox, which is, why haven't we seen life in the universe if the factors that can lead to life are so common or so easily found in the universe? And so Connor here is going to now start to lead us through some of the more creative and maybe, might I say, eyebrow-raising solutions to Fermi paradox. So Connor, what are some of the more creative Fermi paradox solutions? And I ask that with a hint of fear in my heart.
All right. Well, we'll get to some of the really, really creative ones in a bit. But to start off, let's continue on the theme of ways to stop life from developing.
Right.
So what are some of the more creative ways? And one of them very specifically is the shielded Earth hypothesis, which we touched on earlier. It's the idea that there's something about our solar system which protects Earth. So our moon is uncharacteristically large. And then there's also Jupiter, which is not necessarily in the normal placement for a Jupiter-sized planet. We're actually quite sure that Jupiter has migrated in our solar system from a different location to where it is now. So Jupiter might be just perfectly placed to stop asteroids from hitting Earth, and perhaps has protected us or shielded us from a lot of catastrophic events, which would have stopped the development of intelligent life. Asteroids don't really wipe out life entirely, but they could certainly reset the clock. And if you reset the clock too often, then you never get intelligent life.
Yeah.
So maybe Earth is just special and shielded because of the arrangement of our solar system being just right. Mm. Another one is early self-annihilation. So self-annihilation sounds pretty brutal. early self-annihilation or early self-limiting life is the idea that as life is first developing on a planet, there is a chance that it kills itself, which sounds kind of counterintuitive.
Too smart, too soon.
Like, we're used to thinking of nature as being this thing which is in perfect balance and harmonious, but life on Earth actually had a really chaotic initial start. One of the chemicals which we consider essential today, oxygen, when it was originally produced on Earth, it was actually a toxic chemical to life. So the first bacteria to produce oxygen almost wiped out all life on Earth. So the idea is maybe we got really lucky. Maybe the tiny bit of life which managed to survive this oxygen Earth doesn't actually happen very often.
Now, why was this initial production of oxygen toxic? Was it just a different molecular form, a different isotope? Why was it toxic?
So oxygen itself,
when we say oxygen, are we talking just an oxygen atom or the oxygen molecule, which is two atoms?
It's the oxygen molecule specifically. Okay. Right. So the oxygen molecule itself is somewhat unstable. It reacts very easily with just about anything. If you've ever left your bike out for too long, you're aware of how aggressive oxygen can be on various chemicals. So oxygen is highly reactive. In fact, you have to have special procedures to store oxygen in a lab if you've got liquid oxygen. So oxygen is extremely reactive, and it was it was toxic to early life because they didn't have any way to safely handle it. Mm-hmm. So all it did was react chemically with them and essentially oxidize them. It was almost like a slow version of fire, right, destroying this life.
Just rusting everything. Rusting life.
Rusting life, yeah. So oxygen is a pretty tricky chemical to deal with. But right, that also makes it really useful for us because it's so reactive. It releases a lot of energy. And well, it's involved in releasing a lot of energy. It doesn't do that itself.
Yeah.
But we can use it to our advantage. And that's why you need to breathe every few seconds in order to keep yourself going, because you'd use a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And there's oxygen just everywhere. So another, the consequent or the opposite of early self-annihilation is late self-annihilation. So it's possible that a civilization becomes technologically advanced and destroys itself. We almost did this as humans with nuclear weapons on several occasions.
Almost.
So there's like nuclear weapons is one example, but even just like the ozone layer.
Yeah.
We almost obliterated the ozone layer, but came together as a whole planet to solve this problem, and we succeeded.
Yeah.
If we hadn't succeeded, if we had reached some technologies a little earlier and before we had developed international collaborations, it's possible that each individual nation would have just carried on, and maybe some of them would have stopped and some of them wouldn't, and we could have destroyed the whole ozone layer, and that would not be great. Or climate change is another one, which is just a more complicated version of destroying the ozone layer. There's many things which an advanced civilization can do to not destroy all life on Earth, but maybe destroy themselves. And that could be something which limits a intelligent civilization from rising to the level that it needs to colonize the galaxy. So that would count as a great filter. That would be something which stops civilizations from being detectable to us. And finally, as we discussed in our whole dangerous universe series, there's just the dangerous universe hypothesis. What if there are somewhat rare events, but there's enough of them that one of them tends to get a civilization at some point? Yeah. So a black hole could swing by the solar system and totally disrupt the solar system, knock your planet out of your solar system. If you're really unlucky, you could fall into the black hole. So something like that could happen. A nearby star could go supernova and sterilize a planet just by releasing so much
energy.
Light.
Yeah.
Energy. Yeah. Maybe a lot of stars have really intense solar flares, and they tend, even when a planet is in its Goldilocks zone, every now and then, maybe every tens of thousands, millions of years, it just blasts out a giant solar flare that completely bakes one side of the planet.
Yeah, and maybe that's one of the reasons why we don't expect Earth-like planets to be around bigger stars, because those bigger stars go through more of those solar flare-like events. Because
yeah,
they're just burning fuel so fast.
And also smaller stars, you have to be closer in order to be in the Goldilocks zone, and maybe it also puts you in the line of fire of the solar flares for these smaller stars.
Yeah.
So maybe we are in just the right, like there's a very, very narrow window where a star doesn't obliterate life on its own, its own planets. So there's a dangerous universe out there, as we've spent a whole series discussing.
Right.
And there's many sort of big catastrophic events that could come out of nowhere and just wipe out a civilization.
Right.
Or just wipe out all life in general. Those are ways which we could stop life from happening.
All right, Connor. We started out the series by saying, oh, this is the living universe, so this is going to be a little positive. But all of this has sounded fairly bleak to me. But also, we are living in the realms of ifs and buts. So what if we assume life does form? Can we still solve the Fermi paradox?
Yes, we can. So the next set of great filters or solutions to the Fermi paradox that we're going to consider are ones where all the things that we've been saying, like, oh, what if this is really rare? Or what if this dangerous thing happens? What if it actually does occur roughly the way that we think it does. And life is fairly common in the universe, and intelligent life develops straightforwardly from that, just with a, on a long timescale. One option, one hypothesis to solve this problem is, what if we are just the firstborn? It's the firstborn hypothesis. What if planet Earth is the first one in our galaxy, more or less, to appear with intelligent life on it? So maybe life is as common as we think it is. Maybe the universe is teeming with life, but we're the first one to reach intelligent life. Now, there's a few ways that that could happen. Maybe our solar system is just the first one to occur at with all of the properties that we want. Or you can consider Earth took around 3 billion years to go from life to intelligent life. That is actually on a similar time scale to the life of the universe, which is 10 billion years. So what if life is common, intelligent life follows straightforwardly from it, but it just generally takes longer? We got a bunch of lucky breaks over those 3 billion years, and it sort of accelerated the pace. So we're just the first one to come out of the race of natural selection with intelligence.
Yeah. And there are a few right behind us.
Yeah. And so maybe over the next billion years
we see more coming out.
There will be more coming out just by everything following its natural course.
Right.
So
I must say this is comforting and not comforting at the same time to some extent. So I'm just going to let you continue, but I just wanted to air my concerns and relief at the same time.
maybe we're just the first ones, or maybe we're a zoo world. There's the zoo world hypothesis where Earth is actually an experiment by aliens. And they put life on Earth, and they've been watching us to see how we grow. And it's totally possible, but it would be really hard to do so and not leave a trace.
Right.
And also I don't quite like this hypothesis because it's unbearably slow. We can use the fossil record to see it took about 3 billion years to go from the first life to us here on Earth. So any alien civilization willing to go through a experiment like that must work very differently from Earth, because I know I could not get funding for an experiment that takes 3 billion years.
Okay.
It's hard enough to get funding for the next 3 years. So zoo world hypothesis, technically possible, but I don't really like it.
Me neither. I agree with you.
Then there's the prime directive hypothesis. Anyone who's watched Star Trek is aware of the prime directive. Maybe there's lots of advanced civilizations out there, but they have a prime directive of non-interference, so they will not reveal themselves to us until we reach a certain technology level. So we've just got to build that warp drive, and then suddenly they'll pop up out of everywhere.
Right.
And it'll totally make sense that they were just hiding themselves until we became intelligent and independent and advanced. I mean, it's possible. It's kind of hard to hide yourself from a civilization which is really actively looking for aliens. But the thing is, we're not super actively looking for aliens. Like there's groups out there that are really engaged and trying, but there's no huge dedicated programs to finding life yet, at least not intelligent life.
Yeah.
So it's not impossible. It would just be kind of hard to do. Anyway, the next hypothesis is the dark forest. This is sort of a sinister version of the prime directive. This is the idea that there are many intelligent civilizations out there that are super advanced, but they're hiding from each other because they're terrified. You can imagine how scary it would be for us to make first contact. I mean, if they came to Earth, but any civilization which could make it to Earth across the vastness of space would be so much more advanced than us. It would be terrifying. Their spaceship, whatever it is, would be capable of wiping out our civilization. So they're understandably scared of other civilizations.
Right.
Also, an advanced civilization would relatively easily be able to create weapons that are capable of destroying a planet. Mm. We talked about some of this in the Dangerous Universe. in the Dangerous Universe series. So if a civilization revealed itself, suddenly, now that it's revealed itself, any other civilization has a question to answer. Do they reveal themselves and put themselves equally at risk? Or do they destroy that other civilization before that civilization detects them and destroys them? Mm. These planet-destroying weapons could be totally undetectable until suddenly, boom, your planet is destroyed. So that's a pretty terrifying thought. And maybe every civilization that's still alive has made the decision, let's not announce ourselves to the rest of the galaxy.
In which case, we're just sawing the branch that we're sitting on by announcing ourselves quite a bit.
Well, so far, we're not announcing ourselves too much. We've blasted a signal directly at a globular cluster. Like we've tried to make direct contact with a globular cluster. But other than that, we're just sending out weak radio signals. And as we get more advanced, we're actually making weaker and weaker signals.
Well, Voyager 1 and 2 also.
It'll be tens of thousands of years before they get to anything, though.
Yeah.
So yes, maybe all the smart civilizations are in hiding and all the not so smart ones are obliterated.
Because,
it's almost like the Cuban Missile Crisis on a galactic scale. anyway, another hypothesis is the secluded world hypothesis. So imagine if a civilization just isn't interested in exploring the rest of the galaxy. They've gotten to an advanced civilization. They could explore the galaxy, but they also just really developed some awesome virtual reality technology and they're playing video games. I mean, imagine making the decision, I could stay here on Earth and play video games of every possible imaginable universe. I could be the hero of every story, or I could get on a ship, possibly die, and spend my entire life in transit towards another star, waiting for several generations of my children to eventually land on this other star. Like maybe the civilizations just make the choice, you know what? It's more fun to stay home.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either. And I don't like it for a very specific reason. Any advanced civilization that is going to reach the technology level that they could do this kind of thing is going to be as diverse as our own civilization, right?
Right.
We've got so many different people with different opinions about everything, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't seem likely to me that every single member of a giant society would make the same choice about staying home. Any civilization which has taken over an entire planet must have pioneers in their ranks, people that are willing to strike out and see what happens.
Mm.
So, I mean, I guess another alternative version of it is that some civilization gets stuck in a 1984 type world where there's a large government that's controlling everyone and keeping them down at a certain level. But this seems unstable to me for the same reasons that 1984, the book, explores. There's always people working against the system.
Yeah.
And a system which refuses to advance technologically is therefore susceptible to any other group which does wish to advance technologically.
Right.
So I think 1984 would be an unstable state, which maybe a civilization could exist in for a long time, but not forever. Finally, the least sinister of our solutions to the Fermi paradox is the transcendence hypothesis.
Mm.
The idea that there's some technology so vastly beyond our current understanding that allows civilizations to leave the universe altogether and go on to some like mystical multi-universe or multiverse or other plane of existence or something outside of the realm that we think of as the normal universe. Maybe dark matter is actually some awesome spirit world. But the thing is, by its very nature, we have no proof that this is a plausible solution to the great filter, and we never would until we figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah.
It doesn't make for a very good solution when the entire thing is hypotheticals that we have no reason to suspect exist.
Yeah.
It's really just grasping at straws at that point. I think some of the other solutions are much more compelling.
Yeah, fair enough.
So yeah, that's sort of my condensed list of solutions to the Fermi paradox. Of course, some of these may have sparked other ideas as you were listening to them. As you think about them, there are more details for every single one of them, more tracks where they could follow. But I tried to give sort of a high-level view of all the different ways that one could imagine limiting the number of intelligent civilizations zipping around our galaxy. And there's lots of fun stuff to talk about for each one individually. There are people who do whole videos about a single one of these, and it's lots of fun to talk about. But as of now, it's really armchair astronomy because we don't have evidence to go off of. It's all stuff that you can just sit down and think about. And if you come up with some good ideas, people will listen to it.
Yeah.
Everyone's interested in this and figuring it out.
Okay, great. So I guess that brings us to the end of some of the solutions to Fermi paradox. When we come back next time, we're going to sort of dive into the more science that is being the more scientific groups and projects that are running out there to look for life on other planets in our galaxy. This was quite fun, and we can't wait to see what the next episode brings us. But for now, it is goodbye from us here at the Queen's Observatory.
Yeah, there's lots of really cool science being done, trying to find life in the universe. So next episode is going to be really neat.
Cool. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. We hope you enjoyed this walk through the universe. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us via email at queensuobservatory@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter as the Queen's University Observatory to stay up to date. If you like this podcast, you can help us by leaving a review and sharing it with your friends. This will help us become more visible and spread the wonders of the universe to more people. That is all from us. We'll be back again with another exciting topic in astronomy.